Hi, I'm Meredith.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to I'm Not Scared, You're Scared,
a horror movie podcast.
If you are a fan of the show, please like and follow us on iTunes and Spotify and review us. It'll help spread the word.
Also, you can follow us on Instagram at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared, or email us at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared at gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. We're here to talk about
The Bye Bye Man.
The Bye Bye Man, released in 2017.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorites.
I'm laughing because there's a whole backstory. We can get into it in a moment. But first, what's new with you?
So the Oscars were a couple weeks ago, and after that, it's always like this wake up call of the number of movies being made that I don't see. But last night I did actually watch Nosferatu, which frequent listeners know I'm not into the vampire thing. That's a divisive point between me and Meredith and Victor.
I will watch any vampire movie ever.
Yeah. But I wanted to see Nosferatu. And I still want to watch Last Voyage of the Demeter as well, because a lot of times, the style of a vampire project is not appealing to me. And so when you add that to the fact that I think vampires are stupid, then that's why I don't enjoy those projects. But, the style of Nosferatu and Last Voyage of the Demeter seemed like the kind of scary movie that I do normally get into. And so I thought maybe I could look past the vampire element.
Yeah.
I certainly underestimated the cast of this. The only name I associated with it before starting it last night was Willem Dafoe.
Oh, yeah.
And we love Nicholas Holt. So to like have him just pop up in like the first frame.
He's the best. I loved him in The Great. Do you ever watch that on Hulu?
Yes.
He's
yeah.
so funny. He's
yeah.
so
fucking funny. And The Menu, of course, is, yes. you know, a great horror contribution of his.
I love him.
And then, you know, then even though you almost like you never if I hadn't looked it up, I never would have known it was him, that Bill Skarsgård was the Count.
Yes. Yeah.
And like there's a couple close ups of his eyes where you're like, oh, yeah, that's Bill. But aside from that, you would never know it was him.
True. Yeah.
Like even his voice, like listening for his
like
voice.
This.
Yeah. Because most different. Of the work that I've seen him in, he's putting on like this, a very dramatic character. And so it's not I couldn't say that I necessarily know what his natural voice sounds like, even though in Barbarian he was just playing a normal guy.
Yeah.
But I don't really remember what his voice sounded like.
He sounds like a white dude.
Pretty much.
He's like, hey, want some wine? I'm like,
let me show you how to put a duvet cover on.
Yeah. He's like, we're doing laundry together and
this is
living
cute.
Your life.
It's such a meet cute. Mm-hmm. And I would say that I didn't hate it. I didn't love it, partly because to me it felt like it was longer than it really needed to be. Like it's kind of seemed to drag in some points.
Yeah.
They had a lot of really great characters developed, but I did not anticipate it being, for me, the Lily Rose Depp character was such a focal point, like so much more so, because it had a lot of parallels to Bram Stoker's Dracula, obviously, in the story.
Yeah.
And the characters.
Different setting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Different setting and different emphasis on the characters and the relationships. And I feel like if we're to look at the Lily Rose Depp character, I think it was Ellen. Mm-hmm. Compared to Winona Ryder's Mina.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I looked at this like, I bet Lily Rose thought she was going to come away with an Oscar nomination for this. Like, she really went for that character big time.
Yeah. Yeah. It brings up so much because that movie is scary and all this stuff. But there's also, like, the women's hysteria, like, component where, like, if a woman had these mental illness or feeling like different kinds of feelings, they're like, lock her up in an asylum.
Well, I love the part where they're like, have her sleep in her corset, it will help calm her.
I know, and I'm like, geez, okay,
are you good, fucking kidding
here
me?
Come the leeches, give her some mercury to help.
Yeah. And there were some points where I felt like she seemed a little like overacting a bit, but I think that was just because the character was supposed to be so intense.
Yes.
And the shift in emphasis and the focus on that character, I thought was something different from the, you know, the vampire, the little vampire stuff that I've seen in the past.
Yeah. The Last Voyage is pretty, it's good. I mean, it's a scare. It's nothing as romantic about it. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh my gosh.
It's just scary.
What are we going to do? And David Dastmalchian, I think is how you pronounce his name. He's in it also. He's in, he's the host from Late Night with the Devil.
Right.
Also.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I love him.
And he's... The Onion Knight is in it too.
Yes, I love him too.
So yeah, I would say, like, you know, of the vampire movies that I've seen, I liked it. But yeah, I think it could have been a little shorter.
Yeah, it was, you know, definitely an Eggers
yes.
effort where it's yeah. like, it's like a million year long movie.
Well, and it was like 2 hours and 17 minutes, which he probably thought was showing great restraint.
Yeah, probably.
He probably could have made it 3 hours without even trying.
Yeah, yeah. I bet you on the, if there's a release of,
yeah,
they'll have, it'll probably be hours of yeah. stuff.
Now that I think about it, when it finished last night, because whatever it was streaming on, the next thing that it promoted was the extended cut. And I can't remember if I clicked on it to see how long.
Is it like Lord of the Rings extended cut where it's like 3 hours?
Yeah, it might be. But yeah, anyway, what's new with you?
Well, there's just been we're not a town anymore in our city. Of Pacifica, we've kind of like had a big loss, and he is a contributor of our podcast, and he wrote our intro music as well. My good friend Tony Corton died unexpectedly a few weeks ago, and he had so many people in this community who just absolutely adored him, including several schools. He was a longtime teacher at my elementary school. He was a vice principal at a school here in town too, and then had a started this year as a principal of another elementary school. So we're all kind of definitely deep in mourning, really trying to grapple with this grief and loss. And the way I kind of dealt with it a bit was listening back to some of our episodes, because it's nice to hear his voice where we're kind of just like light and like yeah. laughing, and he enjoyed like the dark stuff and the funny stuff mm-hmm. and all that stuff. So
yeah, and he had such a great perspective too. Like yes. he was enough older than us that he had, you know, he was at a different age when certain projects came out, and he's from Wales.
Yes. Yeah.
And so obviously like a different you know, nationality and background mm-hmm. of where he grew up. Like he had such a fun perspective on stuff.
Definitely. And he was funny when we talked about, like, you know, The Exorcist mm-hmm. or when he came to talk about Hellraiser, and he told us about different things being banned in the UK, and he couldn't mm-hmm. even watch it until you know, much later, or the VHS, whatever, or Betamax. I can't remember what he said. I was like, I don't know what that is. So we would always joke a lot about our age difference, and our we would message each other like different movies about movies or books that we always in the spooky element, always probably Stephen King related, or he'd listen to an episode where it's just the two of us, and he'd give me feedback. He'd be like, I loved where you talked about, you know, but like The Ritual, he loved our episode of that, and he thought that was really fun. And we were, you know, we had hoped that he would come back, and we talked about it, and I'm just really sad it won't happen. And my thoughts are with him and his family, so I just wanted to kind of address that's been weighing heavily on me. And but you know, in true Tony fashion, he would love for us to just talk about scary movies
yeah.
and like what has freaked us out and what books we've enjoyed, and so we'll just on with the show. But I'd want to yeah. just share that, and if anyone's new to the podcast or coming on, or you know, listening today because they loved him, you know, listen to the episode about Hellraiser mm-hmm. where he came and joined us, or Texas Chainsaw Massacre where he was there for that one too. Yeah. And of course he wrote our music, and I told him, I begged him to write it, and I was like, I can't pay you, I don't have any money. And then I was like, I'll pay you in compliments and accolades. And he was like, okay, I'll take it. So he was just a generous heart, and he'll be missed. So yeah. anyway, that's about it. But you did the recap.
I did.
This time around.
Yeah.
So here's the funny story. I was very excited about this movie.
And I was very surprised that when I mentioned it off of the list of ideas that I had, that she was so gung-ho about this movie, because I would have guessed it would be the kind that I would love and she would roll her eyes and gag at. But she's like, yes, oh, I love that movie. Definitely, let's do that. And I was like, oh my God, what a surprise.
My friend has really shocked me today. So I was going to do the recap. And I texted Katie a few days ago and was like, fun fact, I'm about 15 minutes into this movie and I've never seen it before. I don't know what this is. I was thinking of The Empty Man.
Yeah, which I've seen that too, and that makes sense to me that you would like that one.
Yeah, because it's so weird.
It's very different.
It's wild. It's a wild one. And then I was watching this and I was like, I've never seen this. I have no. I started writing about the recap, doing the recap, and be like, some kids are here, like teenagers, like college people. I don't know. They're renting a house. I didn't know what was happening. So anyway, I messaged Katie. And
we swapped.
I fessed up. I was like, I was mistaken. Mm-hmm. I don't know what this is. So we swapped. And now she's doing the recap because I am a bozo. And I always get movies mixed up.
Yeah, well, and we've talked about this before, that, like, especially horror movies, so many of them have very similar generic scary titles.
Yeah,
like,
sometimes.
Demon, demonic, devil, devil's own, devil's advocate, devil, you know, like,
yeah.
Them, this, let us that, in. They, it.
Them. Let us in. Let them in.
Let the right
don't
one
let
in.
Them in.
Get out.
Get out.
Don't speak. Hush.
Come in.
Come in.
Go
knock,
away.
Knock. Knock at the cabin. Knock at the door.
I know, so I'm like, I need you to describe the monster or the bad guy in the title.
Because, conceptually, Bye Bye Man and Empty Man evoke the same idea of what a movie would be about. But they are quite different.
Very different. So anyway, that's the quick little
juicy tidbit.
If you're wondering why Katie is doing the recap multiple times in a row.
Yeah.
It was me.
We had to do a switcheroo.
Yep.
But I didn't mind at all because I fucking love this movie. So it's got a lot of fun faces popping up here and there. And so, I can address those as they appear in our story. But one of them right off the bat. So the movie begins with a neat suburban home and the text on the screen that says Madison, Wisconsin, October 20th, 1969. And the coloration of this scene and everything definitely evokes that time period.
Yeah.
And the car pulls up to the house and Larry, who is Lee Winnell.
I know. I love him.
Yeah. From the Insidious universe and, an actor, a director, a writer. Awesome guy. But in this, he plays one of our primary characters, Larry. He goes to the door and urgently asks the woman if she told anyone, quote, the name. She flippantly says, oh, she told Rick. And Larry, saying he's sorry, walks despondently but determinedly back to his car and retrieves a shotgun. The audio and image of a train roaring down tracks plays over Larry killing his lady neighbor and her husband, Rick. But before Rick's death, he admits to Larry that he told the name to Giselle. So now Larry's pursuing Giselle across the street. And as he does so, he's obsessively repeating to himself, don't think it, don't say it, don't think it, don't say it, over and over again. We see him enter another house and hear screams and more shotgun blasts, and then the image of the train again. So he's on a warpath, just blasting people away based on their knowledge of some name that we don't know.
Uh-huh.
Spoiler alert, it's Bye Bye Man.
Not Empty Man is what we think. No,
definitely not Empty Man. You can think and say that all you want. Okay, so now it's present day, and three friends greet each other at their college gate and are excited to go check out their newly leased off-campus home. So Elliot, who's our real main character, is actor Douglas Smith, who is should look familiar. He was in The Alienist, which is a show that
I
we love.
I love that movie. Yeah, that show. And he was in, Big Love. He was one of the
I saw that on his bio, but I've never seen that. He was also in the first Ouija movie.
Oh, yeah.
but anyway, so that's Elliot. He's a cutie pie. It's his girlfriend, Sasha, and his lifelong best friend, John. Mm-hmm. The three of them arrive at the empty house that they've rented and explore. Elliot finds that the basement is full of furniture. Soon, they're all settled in with said furniture distributed around the house, and Elliot and Sasha are the picture of young love bliss being all mushy in their bedroom. And then while Elliot brushes his teeth, Sasha hears the sound of a coin hit the floor. She follows the sound to the partially open door to a crawl space under the eaves in their bedroom. And this is one of two matching doors that are opposite each other on either side of their bed space in this, you know, second floor room of this old house. As she peers inside the crawl space, the main door to the bedroom slams shut, but it's not Elliot. So we're like, whoa, why did it slam? And a spooky camera trip down the dark hallway sets the mood. So it's like, mm-hmm. Oh, shit's already going down. It's night one in this house.
Yeah, and their bathroom has like a beaded curtain.
Yeah,
yeah, which, like, why that's wouldn't a choice. It? Okay.
Okay, so it's housewarming party time, and Elliot's brother Virgil is there, and he's played by Michael Trucco or Trucco. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name.
He looked familiar, but I didn't know what from.
Yeah, he was in Hush, he was in Midnight Mass, and he was in Fall of the House of Usher.
Okay, yeah. Now so, that you're saying it, Midnight yeah. Mass. Oh. Freaking yeah. love that show.
So, mm-hmm. yeah. So, obviously, he's in a lot of projects by your favorite.
By my favorite. Mike my Flanagan. Most favorite.
Yeah. So, but he also kind of looks, he reminds me a little of Dane Cook, which is not necessarily a good evocation.
I can see it a little bit, yeah.
But anyway, so this is Elliot's brother, Virgil. He arrives at the party with his wife and his cute little daughter, Alice, who Elliot's clearly very close to, his little niece, to help them celebrate. A brotherly chat at the party shows Virgil urging Elliot to enjoy his college years, like really live it up. But Elliot protests that he wants what Virgil has, is a great family, like a great wife, a awesome daughter. So he's definitely looking to the future in a way that most college kids wouldn't be.
Yeah, he's very like, I know what I want. Yeah. You know, I'm here to get my education and settle down.
Yeah.
Basically, not just be, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And then the brother's like, well, I didn't get to do that. And he's like, well, I'm not like you.
Yeah, sorry about that. As they note Sasha dancing with John at the party, Virgil remarks, it's a good thing you're not jealous. But Elliot clearly is not in the slightest. I mean, this is his best friend since childhood. And, you know, he's totally confident with both his relationships with Sasha and John. Like, he's comfortable with all of this. Later in the party, Alice is wandering around the house, which I noted she's the only kid at a kegger.
Yeah.
It sucks to be her. So she's trying to keep herself
amused.
She's
living her best life. She's having fun.
And in Elliot and Sasha's bedroom, she is also drawn to the crawl space door. And in a wide shot of the whole room, we see her open one door and the matching door behind her opens in tandem, like they're connected. And a vague dark shape partially emerges from the other door and then withdraws when Alice closes her door. As both doors shut at the same time, the sound of a coin hitting the floor is heard again. Alice finds it under the bedside table and almost leaves with it until her conscience kicks in and she returns to leave it on the table, like, I can't steal this coin. But as she comes and goes from the room, we see against the wall the shadow of what must be a long black cloak hanging up against the wall, which is like, they why? Never explain or identify, like, whose cloak this is, why it's hung not in the closet, but out in the bedroom against the wall, like, 6 feet up.
Yeah, it makes me think of, shoot, was it
First Omen?
The First Omen, yep. Where I'm like, why would you just hang that against the wall to be terrified?
Yeah, in the shape as if someone was in it.
Ready to Valak. It's coming to get you.
Yeah, like, how do you even manage to hang something in that way? Like, did you, like, put multiple thumbtacks in it to position it so it looks like there's somebody
something's
in it?
Something's, like, flying at you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seemed very deliberate.
Yeah. Kind of obvious.
Yeah.
Kind of obvious. Mm-hmm. Not a super sophisticated way to present a scary element, mm-hmm. but not an unusual one.
Yeah,
either.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay, so as Virgil and his family leave the party, Sasha's friend Kim arrives. And so Kim is played by an actress named Jenna Kennel, who was in the Terrifier movies.
I love her.
Yeah. And she was also in Renfield.
I don't remember her in that, but yeah. Renfield was very funny.
That was a great movie.
With Nicholas. Speaking of Nicholas Holt, that was a good one. He was so funny.
So another somewhat familiar face shows up, Kim. And Sasha tells Elliot that Kim's going to do a psychic cleansing of the house after everyone is gone from the party. Momentarily back in his bedroom, Elliot notices the coin, but it's again laying on the floor under the bedside table, even though Alice left it on top. He puts it away in the drawer of the table, but it immediately falls from the bottom of the table again.
Something is amiss.
Right? So naturally, one would think there's something wrong with the drawer. So inspecting how it fell out, Elliot has taken the drawer from the table and finds that the bottom of the drawer is covered in writing that says, "Don't think it, don't say it," over and over and over again. And when he pulls aside the paper lining of the drawer, he sees the words, "The Bye-Bye Man."
Mm-hmm. This drawer is full of coin-shaped holes.
An interesting plot developing language.
This is weird.
So it's a very important drawer. So later after the party, Kim sages the house, and after that, the four hang out while Elliot and John gently, not so gently, mock Kim's self-professed psychic, quote, sensitivity.
Right.
Because they are clearly, like, skeptics or whatever. And I mean, John's trying to put the moves on her, and they're like, teasing her and
shit. So he's not being, like, horribly rude. He's just like, whatever, you know, but also trying to be not super condescending. So she's like, you know, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
He wanted her to hang out after the party.
Yeah. I did. So to prove her stuff to these skeptical boys, Kim leads them in a like just kind of a casual light seance for them sitting there holding hands. And her first revelation that she picks up from her connection is that Elliot's parents died in a crash. And John's like, you know, I didn't tell her. And Sasha's like, I would never tell. Like, you know, he was like, okay, who told you? Who told you my parents died in a crash?
Mm-hmm.
And so his skepticism toward Kim turns to anger that, you know, that this very obviously painful and serious element of his life is, he thinks, being like, you know, hijacked for the purposes of her pretending to be a psychic.
Like a parlor trick. Oh, this is so funny. Much. And he's like, no, this is not funny. This is kind of a bummer, actually.
Yeah. So he goes and hides something to like kind of challenge her to tell him, you know, what did he hide and where did he hide it?
Mm-hmm.
She's starting to get really uncomfortable with what she's picking up, the vibes she's picking up from the house. And she wants to stop the seance. But of course, then when he pushes back against her, she's able to immediately tell him that he hid his keys in a pot on the stove. So like she knew that's not why she wants to stop. And then she says something's coming and that these entities or whatever are saying, don't think it, don't say it. And she keeps repeating that to the point where she's screaming it over and over again until John finally just calls out, like, don't say what? And Elliot answers a question, the bye-bye man. And suddenly the candle snuffs out and they're in darkness. So it's like this very, like, you know, confluence of these characters and this information. And it's like, clearly it's spreading.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, it's spreading. Sorry.
Just like It Follows.
100%.
Except you're spreading it with your words,
not your genitals.
Not doing it.
So later that night, Elliot and Sasha are in bed, and Elliot wakes up to see what is clearly a hooded figure standing against the wall. So in the darkness, the cloak that is, you know, weirdly positioned on the wall, it's a person.
Mm-hmm.
But when he turns on the light, it's just the ridiculously tall black hooded cloak hanging on the wall again.
Well, you saw who played the entity.
Yeah. What else? I didn't look at. What do we know him from?
You know, Billy Butcherson from Hocus Pocus, he's the creature in, I mean, it's like the list is insane. He's in so much stuff.
Yeah. And it's all like, it's body horror, like, you know, he's always
Labyrinth.
Like a shape.
Yeah. He's like the guy with the eyeballs.
Yeah. The gangly guy.
I mean, he's got like hundreds of credits in horror movies or fantasy or whatever, Doug Jones, and he's amazing.
Yeah.
So, I love him.
See, this movie is just full of gems.
Star-studded. Ooh, and he played that in Annabelle Comes Home, is it? Or it's like a creation, actually.
The black creature.
Demon creature. Mm-hmm. That was like so scary. He played that too.
Nice. Okay, so, you know, he brings all of that experience to this character.
Yes.
Like, yes, he does.
Sure.
Okay, so Elliot follows a noise downstairs, and as he walks through a doorway in, like, you know, the kind of semi-darkened first floor, we see the hooded, white-faced figure in the shadows behind him just quietly. It's one of those where if you weren't looking closely, you might miss it. Sometimes the glimpses toward the beginning of this movie remind me a little bit of when they added the ghost face to The Exorcist, the original Exorcist, where it was like, in some instances, it's just like a flash. It's like a single frame flash.
Yeah.
That's just supposed to be like, wait, what? Like, did I see something? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Just to keep that tension up.
Yes. Yeah. And then Sasha comes after Elliot downstairs. And, you know, and that's kind of the end of the early nighttime disturbance this time, because we know that these movies always like start with just the infestation process of whatever spirit or entity is going to be plaguing these people. It's just little hints at first.
Yeah.
The next morning, John is driving Kim home after a night together, but an unsuccessful night, it seems, as they imply that John couldn't, quote, perform. He's like, it doesn't happen to me. And she's like, it doesn't happen to me either. She tries to console him and even invite him inside to try again. But suddenly he sees maggots falling from her eyes and hair and is like obviously revulsed and kicks her out of the car.
Yeah. He's like, I gotta go.
Yeah.
I have to screech away in my silver Mustang.
Back at the house, Elliot is finding claw marks in the bricks outside. And John returns frustrated, making comments showing how perfect he thinks Sasha is. And so it's kind of like this is revealing that he is a little bit jealous of his best friend for having this, like, you know, beautiful, caring, loving girlfriend that John thinks very highly of his friend's girlfriend. Not necessarily that he would ever act on it or do anything about it, but, you know, that he definitely is jealous of what Elliot has. Sasha, however, is feeling sick today. And while Elliot is making her some tea and they're both in the kitchen, she looks up and sees John standing in the doorway, butt-ass naked, beckoning her. Like, come on, baby. Like, let's go get busy or whatever. Right? Like, and obviously the camera doesn't go below the waist. So yeah. It's not actually full frontal nudity, but you can the camera shows enough to show that he is completely naked. And so Sasha is understandably shocked. She glances over at Elliot, who is standing right there. But when she looks back to where John was standing, he's gone.
Right. Well, I think at this point already, it's like people are being manipulated already.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. But they don't. I don't think that they really know it yet.
No. But like it seemed completely out of character for what he was saying. His friend, is it
Elliot?
Is he the main character?
Yeah.
He's the main character?
Elliot is the main character, and John is the friend.
Yeah, John was saying stuff, and Elliot's like, wait, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. You know, it seemed like he was a little super, you know, very surprised and shocked by what his friend was saying, like, just kind of stunned.
About what?
About him being, like, saying, you know, that girl was dirty and gross.
Oh, she's disgusting,
She's disgusting, and your girlfriend's so clean, and he's like, what?
Yeah, he's, you know, a little puzzled.
He seemed very puzzled. Mm-hmm. So I think already people are being acting out of character and saying things that they wouldn't normally if they weren't in that house or being impacted with some weird possession or whatever.
Right. And as the viewer, like, we're just as surprised as Sasha was that, like, her boyfriend's best friend would just strip down and beckon her, like, essentially within perfect like sight of the friend of her boyfriend.
Yeah.
And so it's surprising. But then the fact that he like suddenly vanishes, it's like, okay, so like maybe it wasn't real.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, so yeah, these little things and like the maggots are obviously like the maggots in Kim's hair and like falling out of her eyeball. You're like, okay, that doesn't really happen.
Yeah.
Just spontaneously.
Something weird is happening.
Yeah. So they're all seeing, well, the two of them are, John and Sasha are seeing stuff. But at this point, I don't think they really know that the visions aren't real yet. Like, Sasha might be, like, skeptical because that would be so out of character for John to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But John, like, you know, he was saying that Kim's gross, man. She's dirty or whatever. So it almost seems like he really thought the maggots were real. Like, she actually had maggots on her. But anyway. So, sorry, I lost my spot. Okay, Elliot calls brother Virgil for advice, as one does. You call your big bro.
Mm-hmm.
But the call is interrupted when Elliot hears more noises. So he hangs up and he's calling out to the others, to John and Sasha, but, you know, doesn't find them. And he follows the noise to the basement where he finds more claw marks like the ones outside and then hears the coin dropping again. He finds the coin, and as he's picking it up, there's a sudden movement along among all the junk in the basement, and Elliot runs in panic back to the stairs, but then the door slams shut right in front of him. Moments later, Sasha and John open it to let him out, and they both tell Elliot that they were there and they didn't hear him calling. But he, like, doesn't believe them, like, how could you not have heard me? And he's suspicious now that there's something going on between the two of them. He keeps repeating that he heard sounds, and Sasha says, I told you something was happening. Like, there's something wrong with the house. And as they talk more later, Sasha shows Elliot her notebook that is filled with these ghostly sketches of a figure and the phrases, don't think it, don't say it, that she does not remember writing or drawing. Like, she basically, like, she says, I went away. And then she was saying to Elliot, you went away. She's like, this, I just woke up and I had done this and I don't remember doing it. And then she says, now that I know his name, he's coming for me. And so that's kind of like the revelation of that. That's the connection between what's happening to them and, you know, Elliot finding the name in the drawer and saying the name to them. But Elliot still tries to convince her that none of this is real. It's like, it's just in your head. You're just not feeling well, blah, blah, blah.
Go wear your corset.
Right? We're just going to give you some laudanum. Oh, no, it wasn't. Ether.
Ether.
That's what I was doing some light research last night watching Nosferatu. It's like, are ether and laudanum like the same thing? Because they had like some of the same medical applications, but it's like, oh, no, laudanum is opium based. Mm-hmm. So it's a little
Here's some
little
cocaine
different.
To fight the demons in your blood.
Pretty much. Okay, so now the same train is rolling down the tracks, approaching the naked backs of three people standing on the tracks, and Elliot wakes from this dream image to again be faced with the shadowy cloak on the wall. Move that cloak.
It's not doing anyone any good, and he's not even wearing it.
And yeah, he never wears it. Like, whose cloak even is it? Like, take it down. Put it away. Put it in a drawer.
It doesn't go with his dead Kennedy's t-shirt anyway. What am I saying? Of course it does.
Of course it does.
You should wear that.
It goes with everything. Then one of the crawl space doors swings open and glowing eyes inside blink at Elliot. And the next thing you know, the shadow cloak is charging toward him, arm outstretched. So this is like kind of like a jump scare moment. And Elliot, you know, dives out of bed, frantically turns on the light to reveal the cloak is now lying in the middle of the floor. Like, not just, oh, it's still hanging on the wall, it's just a cloak. It's like, no, now it's on the floor. Like, something actually happened. So this is like the escalation of what's going on. But Sasha, Sasha's trying to reassure him that nothing's there. She's like, everything's fine. There's nothing, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, are you fucking kidding me?
You were just telling me the exact opposite.
Yeah.
And you drew these creepy Alvin Schwartz-like drawings yeah, from Scary right? Stories to Tell in the Dark.
And one of them just jumped at me from the wall. So tell me I'm crazy,
now
Sasha.
Now you're saying nothing is amiss.
Nothing's here. But you know, obviously, like, she just meet, like, there's nothing there, like, right now, like, you're safe, everything's okay, but now they're both on the same page that something is amiss.
Just take some laudanum and go to bed,
put your corset on. But so the next day they have a plan. Sasha is gonna go talk to their landlord, and, you know, try to maybe get some more information or get some help. And Elliot goes to the university library to do research. Mm-hmm. And again, they're trying to figure out what's going on and get some answers. In his searches, he finds a single, quote, dead file in the archives. And the librarian, Mrs. Watkins, helps him find the article that never went to press. Meanwhile, Sasha kind of strikes out with the landlord. Like, she has a conversation with him. She gets a little bit of information, but, you know, not a lot of progress. And then meanwhile, John, who is
he's kind of just dismisses her.
Yeah, he's very, very condescending.
Uh-huh, and he just says, you look like you just need to go get some sleep. Yeah. She looks a little rough.
Yeah, yeah. She's sick, and she's like, it's so cold in here. And he's like, it's a greenhouse. It's not cold at all.
It's really warm, actually, yeah. And you need to get out of my... Stop giving me your COVID or whatever.
So, yeah. And so while, you know, Sasha's doing that and Elliot's doing research, John's going to class like a good little student. But he pulls out his phone. So he's not such a good student. He's looking at his phone in the middle of a lecture and discovers some mysterious photos of the hooded figure of Bye Bye Man and his dog. And I kind of joked with it. They're like live photos, like they start moving or whatever, like on his phone, which is funny because that's like a I think that's like a thing that they make fun of Gen Xers or millennials for, like, always taking live photos. Like, my kids make fun of have the fact that all my photos are live. I don't know.
You'll take my live photos out of my cold dead hands before right. I will change anything about myself.
Absolutely.
Side parts, skinny
yeah,
jeans.
Side parts, skinny jeans. Yeah.
I don't care.
I got it all.
Back pain.
100% have
I
that.
I don't care.
Okay, so back at the library, Elliot is piecing together the story with Mrs. Watkins, and they basically figure out, so Larry Redman, who is our character from the opening scene, was writing an article about a teenager who went on a killing spree because, as the teen said, the bye-bye man made me do it. Mrs. Watkins points out that after writing that article, Larry Redman himself killed 8 people and then killed himself. We return at this point to the opening scene, so it's kind of like the callback, and we see, you know, more footage where Larry is actually entering the second house and killing the 2 women, whereas before we just saw, you know, the outside of that house and him going in. And then after he kills the 2 women, when he's trying to shoot himself, the shotgun's empty, so he finds and drinks drain cleaner instead. While he's doing this, the bye-bye man is there. He's in the room, fully revealed, and so I think this is the first time, I mean, aside from the photo on John's phone, this is the first time that we really see him as in his entirety, not just like a hint here or a hint there. And he has his hellhound, which is like a, you know, pretty weak CGI, like it's kind of like,
yeah,
I feel like a fusion of the zombie Dobermans from Resident Evil with like Gozer from the original Ghostbusters. And it's just like this big, bloody, gory looking hound type
it's
thing.
It's a little clunky.
Yeah, it's his companion.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's not brilliantly executed.
Yeah.
They might have been better off using a real dog with some, you know, ragu smeared
put a
on
little,
it.
Put a little blood and an eyeball on the a real dog.
Yeah. But anyway, he's the bye-bye man's companion, this hellhound. And he is feasting on the bodies of the women that Larry just killed. And Larry tells Bye Bye Man, "You won't win. I won't let you," before dying on the floor. So back in the library, Elliot and Mrs. Watkins come to the conclusion that all of this evidence was purposely redacted. That's why they couldn't find it anywhere else. Maybe to erase the existence of the idea entirely. You think? So she points out to Elliot that the paper that Elliot has in his hand is the last evidence of the bye-bye man before she just leaves him alone, you know? And of course, once he's alone, the lights begin to flicker and the bye-bye man appears in the library, you know, seated at that table, now suddenly closer as Elliot frantically scribbles out every occurrence of the bye-bye man name in the article until Mrs. Watkins suddenly reappears, furious that he's damaging this artifact. And Elliot realizes that he's lost almost an hour of time mm-hmm. and he was supposed to meet Sasha. By the time he gets to where he was supposed to meet her, he sees her from a distance with John and he sees the two of them embrace and leave together in John's car. So, you know, things are escalating, as is formulaic in any good horror movie. Any mm-hmm, excellent, mm-hmm. high quality
yep.
horror movie. Okay, so Elliot visits Kim. Speaking to her little, what's the word I'm looking for? Intercom thing outside her door, he admits that he was wrong and asks her to come with him to do another seance. But before she comes down to go with him, we see her washing blood from her hands. We're like, oh my god.
Everyone knew Kim was dirty.
Right? She just walks around with blood all over her hands. It's like, girl, they
She's
make
like,
products.
I was just making meatballs.
So Elliot is driving her back to their house and she confesses that she told her roommate the name. And then talking about it, she says, what else can you do with a cancer but cut it out? And just then Elliot notices a bloody handle sticking out of her purse. We're like, oh, okay. So I think I see where she's going with this.
That seems normal.
Mm-hmm. As they drive past a set of train tracks, Kim sees an overturned car and injured people by the side of the tracks and insists that Elliot stop the car so that they can help. She jumps out and runs back to, you know, this accident scene to be of assistance. And after she's out of the car, Elliot, you know, just out of curiosity, pulls the bloody handle from her purse, revealing a hammer. So he begins to chase after her, unfortunately still choosing to carry said hammer. And in the wide shot of the scene, we see that there is, in fact, no overturned car by the tracks. So that's a vision that Kim was seeing. Elliot screams to her that it's in her head. Nevertheless, she is standing right on the tracks when a real train comes along and splat. Bye-bye, Kim.
Yeah. He's like, it's not real. Hey.
Hey, you. You forgot your hammer.
Where are you going?
Come back. Here comes a train. Oh, no. She was such a nice girl. You're like, no comment.
I felt nothing when I watched that.
Yeah. I will admit that you don't get heavily invested in a lot of the characters in this movie. I feel like the only ones that I really had an emotional resonation with was Virgil and Alice.
Yeah.
And when I get to that point in the end, like, there, you know, I feel like there was a connection there. But the rest of the characters were a little flat. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you didn't have real strong reactions when bad things happened to them, like getting hit by a train. So,
yeah.
It's now the busy post-accident scene at the, you know, at the site of Kim's smushing. And Sasha and John arrive to Elliot. Elliot tells them that the bye-bye man killed Kim by getting into her head and that they're next. He asks them if they've said the name to anyone else, like kind of aggressively, did you tell anyone? Did you say it to anyone? You have to promise not to. You have to swear you won't. You swear you won't. And John pushes back a little bit. Like, he's like, hey, man, you can tell me what to do. And they get into a fight, Elliot and John, about this. And it's broken up by the friendly neighborhood detective Shaw, who's played by Carrie Ann Moss.
Yeah.
Just keeps getting better.
Inexplicably.
Like, what is she doing in this movie?
Okay.
But there she is.
She's like, hello, I'm here for the paycheck. I mean, here, my name is Detective
Shaw.
So.
I'm Detective. They didn't even give me a first name.
Yes.
Shaw confronts Elliot with the report from the train conductor that Kim was actually running from Elliot when he was chasing her with the hammer. And it makes sense that that's what it would look like to a bystander, that they certainly can't see Kim's vision. They don't know the circumstances. They just see a girl jump out of a car and a boy chasing her with a bloody hammer.
That seems not ideal.
No, he really should have left the hammer in the car. And then Shaw also shares that Kim's roommate was found dead.
Uh-huh.
So also killed with a hammer. So she's really zeroing in on Elliot for this one. She starts urging Sasha to explain what's going on. Like, what is it that you're not supposed to say? But in the course of this scene, the kids are all seeing stuff. They're all seeing different stuff. And Sasha, so she like looks to Shaw's face, and suddenly Carrie Ann Moss has gaping bloody holes where her eyes and mouth should be. And so Sasha, seeing this, vomits. And then a moment later, Elliot turns and thinks he sees Bye Bye Man with his hellhound in the crowd. But of course, it turns out to be, you know, a cop with his cop dog. So they're all seeing stuff in this scene. And ultimately, Shaw has...
Wait, you forgot the most funny one.
The wink?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The wink.
Yeah. So John is looking at Shaw, and Shaw winks at him, and he kind of looks like a little puzzled, like, that's weird. So, but then he winks back, and then she looks at him like, what the fuck are you winking at me for? Yes. And he's like, now I'm really confused.
It's
he's
just like 40 seconds of weirdness. Yeah. And I was laughing so hard.
he's like, women are so complicated.
What?
What's going on? No, you winked.
Yeah, I was laughing.
But Shaw sends John to take Sasha home because she's obviously not well. And she takes Elliot to the station. At the station, you know, in the interrogation room, Shaw shares that lucky for Elliot, Kim wrote a suicide note taking responsibility for her roommate's death and also taking responsibility for the deaths of Elliot, John, and Sasha. So that was obviously her plan. Shaw still thinks that Elliot chased Kim in front of the train, maybe because he found out her plan to kill them, and she tries to get him to explain. So she still thinks, you know, that he was chasing Kim, but she knows now that, you know, he at least didn't kill Kim's roommate.
Yeah, something's going on, but, you know, you have to tell me what's happening.
Exactly.
And he's like, no.
He actually makes a very impassioned plea for her to let him spare her. Like, don't make me tell you, don't make me infect you, don't make me put this in your head. And evidently it works, because the next shot is Elliot walking out of the station with Virgil, who came to pick him up. And Virgil also naturally wants to know what's going on, but of course Elliot won't tell him either. Mm-hmm. Because he's, you know, he understands now how this spreads, and anybody that he shares the name with will then become a target of the bye-bye man. When Elliot finally gets back home, he follows grunting sounds to John's bedroom and walks in on John and Sasha getting busy, like,
right,
down and dirty style. And that's not something you want to walk in on your best friend boning your girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And so Elliot picks up a bat and hits John across the head. And a moment later, he sees the reality that Sasha is asleep on John's bed and his friend is now injured on the floor from being bashed in the head with a bat.
Yeah, she's taking a nap.
Yeah, she's a little sleepy. So again, vision placed into his head to cause him to attack his friend. Then the phone rings, as it does, and it's Mrs. Watkins, because what school librarian doesn't have the personal phone number of every student that she helps look up an article? Mrs. Watkins tells Elliot that she's been seeing strange things and she wants to come see him. And he's like, oh, I'm kind of busy right now. But then right then, Elliot finds a note that Sasha had written, on the floor, that reads, Widow Redman, 83 Sunset Hill Road, nightstand. And so then he puts it together at that moment that the nightstand belonged to Larry. And then that's how the information was spread and came mm-hmm. to him. So before ending the call, though, Mrs. Watkins says to Elliot, I'll be there soon, as the camera pans to show a bloody knife in her hand and two bodies laying on her floor.
Yep.
Meredith is overwhelmed with the excitement of this story.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it's interesting, though, that, like, you know, it infected Mrs. Watkins so much more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, yep, that's the interesting part. Shut up. It's a good movie.
Okay.
Continuing.
Continue.
Yes. So Elliot ties John up to protect him from the visions, because now Elliot knows that, like, they're being pitted against each other. Like, the visions are trying to get them to hurt each other. So he ties John up. And throws the nightstand into the woods behind the house. He leaves Sasha asleep on the bed, and he goes to the Widow Redman's house, the address that Sasha had written down. Larry's widow, who is played by Faye Dunaway.
Inexplicably.
Again.
Why? Why?
What? Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like random little favors were called in to be like, hey, come on.
Like, lost a bet.
Yeah. Okay, you're a widow, see, and you live in a shack.
Or it's like, you know, if she's going to stay, like, keep her Screen Actors Guild card, then she needs to work.
Yeah. And she's like, I need my health insurance.
Yeah, and she's like, what's a role I can play that will take less than a day's worth of my time?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so, and they never give her a name. She's just the Widow Redman.
Mm-hmm.
So she explains more about that day at the opening of the movie. That we've now, you know, called back to multiple times. She, the young wife, coming home to find her husband has written, don't think it, don't say it, all over their walls. And, of course, inside, you know, a little side table, a little nightstand in the living room. So she's naturally like, hey, buddy, what the fuck are you doing? Larry elaborates to her about how saying the name summons him and makes people do terrible things as he pulls a shotgun from the closet. Back in, you know, our current time, the Widow Redman asserts that Larry was a hero for killing everyone who knew the name and, including himself, and stopping the bye-bye man. She says the only reason she survived was because he controlled himself and never told her the name. Elliot argues that Larry is no hero because of his writing in the nightstand and the article, now the bye-bye man was back. So mm-hmm. he's like, yeah, he saved you, but what about us? Now we're fucked. And of course, the super, super helpful Faye Dunaway, the only thing she offers him is a pistol. She tells Elliot to kill all the people he told first and then kill himself. She says it's the only way. Mm-hmm. But Elliot disagrees. As he's kind of, you know, mentally digesting all of this information, he decides that it's their fear that makes the Bye-Bye Man real and gives him power. So kind of like a Pennywise scenario, maybe. But that if they're not afraid, then he can't get to them. The widow stands up to poke the fire and is suddenly engulfed in flames. And Elliot moves to save her, question mark, by pointing the pistol at her. Like,
I'm going to shoot the fire off.
The fire is shooting at us. yeah, no, it's like, well, I can't put out the flame, so I'll just kill her to save her from the suffering. I don't know. But he does raise the pistol, like he's going to help by killing her. But then he stops himself and closes it, squeezes his eyes shut, and makes the false vision end. The widow is not on fire at all. And so now he's like, haha, I figured it out. Try again, you son of a bitch.
And she's just like watching him.
Yeah. Why is he pointing that pistol at me?
She didn't even say anything.
No. She was like, they only paid me for 7 lines and I'm not talking anymore.
I will not utter a single extra word.
Unless you pay me more. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Elliot thinks he's figured it out. He's got the solution, but he has to get to his friends in time. To help them, you know, survive this. So he's racing home to Sasha. He sees John standing in the road, but he's certain that it's another trick. So he drives through it and John vanishes. So he's like, yaha, I was right. It was just an apparition. But a moment later, it's Mrs. Watkins in the road and she's no apparition. Elliot slams into her and his car rolls over on the side of the road, which I don't think usually happens when you hit a person.
I do it all the time, and that's never happened.
It's never happened. But well, now
it's... I mean, it's possible he hit her and then lost control of the car.
Yeah, or like swerve. But he didn't swerve because, like, the reason that he hit her, and it was kind of not a jump scare moment, but like a startling moment, is because after he drove through the vision of John, he's turned around looking out the back window of the car, mm-hmm. like, you know, confirming, yeah, there was nobody there. And when he turns forward, that's right the moment that he hits her. And mm-hmm. so he doesn't swerve to avoid hitting her because he can't. But you're right, maybe he swerves after. Either way, his car is now upside down on the side of the road. He you know, drags himself out and he goes to Mrs. Watkins and she is somehow still holding her knife. She had a death grip on that bastard. But then she slumps over dead. So Elliot starts jogging home, pistol in hand, as one does when that is one's only option. Back at the house, you know, Elliot's on his little jog, but then Sasha wakes up in bed. And John regains consciousness in the basement, evidently where Elliot put him, but somehow is no longer tied up. Mm-hmm. So that's a little continuity breach in this. You know, somebody missed that part that, because when Elliot's dragging the unconscious John to the basement in the earlier scene, like his ankles are all bound.
Well, is it like I might be reaching here.
I might be giving them too much credit. A throwback
to maybe The Shining when the entity unties Jack. Completely unties him and kind of lets him out of the freezer when Wendy, you know, subdued him and it seemed like they'd have a little relief, but then they kind of intervened.
Perhaps. Or
I'm reaching, but you are reaching. That is what happened in that movie. So yeah. Whatever.
I can reach with you and suggest that maybe Elliot only thought he tied John up.
Possibly that too.
Yep. Either way.
Either way, it doesn't matter.
No, it sure
he's not
doesn't.
Tied anymore.
He's not tied up. And so he comes out of the basement and goes to the first floor. And that because Sasha had been asleep in John's room on the first floor. And so he goes to her and the two are having simultaneous visions. Sasha thinks John is Elliot. So she's looking at John and seeing Elliot. And John is looking at Sasha and seeing the bloody and battered Kim. Mm-hmm. And so naturally this isn't great because John is trying to get away from Sasha because he thinks it's this, you know,
gross.
This dead person coming mm-hmm. back to get him. Mm-hmm. And Sasha is like, why is my boyfriend running away from me? I don't understand.
Yeah. John is, he's like, zombie, get away.
Get away from me, you gross girl. So they both
end up... You're so dirty. You're so nasty.
Maggots. Maggot girl. So John's trying to get away from her, and he ends up running upstairs. They end up in, you know, Sasha and Elliot's bedroom upstairs, where John finds a huge pair of scissors. Elliot finally arrives home to find John stabbing a screaming Sasha on the floor, and he tackles John. As they struggle, John still has the scissors, so Elliot is forced to shoot John to protect himself. Except after he shoots John, it's not John that he's shot and killed, it's Sasha. And John is lying beside them on the floor, stabbed and bloody. Mm-hmm. So, like, all of the things that they're all seeing are all just wrong. They're just, you know, Bye-Bye Man is in their head and making them see whatever he needs to make them see to cause them to destroy each other. Mm-hmm. Now the Hound emerges from the crawl space in the bedroom and the Bye-Bye Man from his spot, his cloak spot against the wall. And he walks up and places a finger on Elliot's head. And Elliot sees a vision of Virgil's family. So it's basically like they're next, they're my next target. And so Elliot tells Bye-Bye Man to leave them alone, just as we see Virgil ringing the doorbell with Alice at his side. And this is the only part where I feel like there's actual, like, genuine, like, feeling and connection and actual, like, kind of sadness that's portrayed in this movie. The rest of it's just, you know, just kind of fun horror movie wackiness. But this part was a little brutal because, you know, we have to keep in mind that we've been given the facts and the information throughout the movie that their parents died in a crash, so we can imagine that Virgil, the older brother, you know, has, you know, cared for Elliot, and that going through that kind of trauma of losing their parents has made them very close. We've seen that Elliot has this very close relationship with his precious little niece, who she plays a great little character. And so, you know, here's a brother and a niece that both love Elliot and are worried about him, and they're, you know, there to try and help. Mm-hmm. But of course, Elliot won't let them in because he's trying to protect them. And he yells at them to leave as he desperately tries not to say the name. Like, it's like his mouth is just, he can't even control his mouth and the name keeps almost coming out. So he's, you know, downstairs laying on the inside of the front door, and suddenly Sasha's body falls from upstairs. And then the Bye-Bye Man is there with the Hellhound. And then I said, heartbreakingly, Virgil listens from the other side of the door as Elliot shoots himself in the head. So they're like screaming and calling through the door, like, let us in, like, we can help you, like, what, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then Elliot knows that the only way to stop the Bye-Bye Man at this point is to kill himself. And so he shoots himself. Mm-hmm. And and it's just like Virgil is just like right there. And you can imagine being so close to someone that you love so much, like physically so close that there's just like a window between the two of them, and to be like helpless to stop this from happening. And so that's where I was like, oh, like that, I felt that one. So then Virgil and Alice watch a fire break out in an upstairs window of the house, but Virgil tells Alice that the fire can't hurt Uncle Elliot anymore. Later, emergency services are once again on the scene, and Shaw is arguing to another cop that this wasn't just a crazy kid on a rampage, that there's something more going on. So she, you know, her conversation with Elliot earlier and like all the circumstances, again, it looks just like Larry Redmond. Like, this is just somebody who snapped and killed all of these people.
Trinity's on to something.
Yeah, but Trinity's like, ah, but there's more.
There's more.
It's the Matrix.
More of the story.
So there's, you know, she's like, I'm going to figure out what's going on here. As Virgil and Alice are driving home, Alice shows him the coins she found in the little table outside Elliot's house. And we're like, oh, shit. She says that there was writing, too. And for a moment, we think that the Bye-Bye Man might have gotten to her, because she's like, there was writing in the drawer. But then she, like, adorably is like, you know, I can't read in the dark. And so you're like, whew, okay, it didn't get her. But
that definitely had a moment of like, like a little shrug. Aww, the audience would say that, live studio audience.
Pretty much.
And a shrug and a wink.
Big wink.
Yeah.
A big inexplicable wink. But back at the house, firefighters have pulled a still alive John from the house. So obviously when Elliot killed himself, he assumed that John was dead or would die. And that's why at that point he's like, okay, if I kill myself, that'll be the end of it. That'll be everybody.
That'll end the pattern of, or whatever,
the cycle
the infection of this haunting.
Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, John survived, not only being stabbed with the scissors, but the fire. And the firefighters have taken him out.
Him.
this goddamn fire. Anyway, and so, you know, he's on a stretcher being loaded into an ambulance, and Shaw rushes over and she begs him to tell her, like, just tell me what's going on. Tell me. And just as he begins to whisper, bye, the screen cuts to black.
Uh-huh.
And we don't know what happens
next.
Oh
my gosh. I'm so suspense.
I can't wait for Bye Bye Man 2. Meredith.
No.
Did you think this was scary?
This was not, no.
Oh, no. God damn it. This movie scares me so much.
Why?
Well, you go first.
Okay. I did actually watch a few people who do reacts to horror movies and people I kind of watch pretty often. And one, I can't recall his name, but I definitely won't take credit for these thoughts, but I did agree with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he compares... Because this is an urban legend movie.
Okay.
And I have the urban legend actually here on this paper.
Mm-hmm.
But.
Is it heavily redacted?
It wasn't explained in the movie at all.
Oh, the actual urban legend?
Yeah.
Okay.
For where this is based off of.
Okay.
And in another movie, which is we love dearly and has a lot of explanation and backstory provided, is Candyman.
Mm-hmm.
And the execution of that urban legend and the subsequent guy, you know, Tony Todd coming as the Candyman and all that stuff. Like, imagine that movie with zero explanation and understanding of what he is and why he's there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, and how having that backstory and the reason why and, not to mention the acting, of course, in this movie, but all of that really adds to the scare and mm-hmm. to the, oh my gosh, and to the realization that this is supernatural, this is... You know, the main character in Candyman, she was being manipulated and kind of hypnotized and this horrible thing happened to him and the backstory with the bees and all that stuff. And it really gave so much to the viewer experience.
Mm-hmm.
And this could have been that or a little bit more
mm-hmm.
or it could have had a lot of more explained, you know, for example. You know, in Candyman, the scene where they're talking about her thesis and the research and he kind of just lays it all out. The other professor, he mm-hmm. just kind of lays it all out there and they do like a backstory that the movie Bye Bye Man, it could have really benefited from.
So you think they dropped the ball by not integrating any background information on the Bye Bye Man?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, and having it was mysterious a little bit, mm-hmm. and then you're like, who's this guy? Why are we seeing a train randomly?
Yeah, they know. Yeah, the train and the coin. You never know why those are associated with him.
So I feel like there was a lot of elements that could have been explained, and it could have been maybe a 5 minutes.
Yeah,
to get more, and it would have made this movie a lot more, you know, scary and a little more frightening and
giving it more legitimacy.
And yeah, but also like just kind of, why is this guy here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and who is this dog that looks gross but bad CGI? What is he? So I feel like there were elements and it fell flat because it wasn't explained more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And I think they went for more like jump scare stuff than actually like this is why, you know, the Candyman's so scary and mm-hmm. he did all this stuff and he can get you if he says it. Don't go in the room and say the bathroom and say his name 3 times or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that could have really lent a lot. The one part or the parts I really did enjoy were the Lee Winnell parts. Like this first scene I liked a lot. Mm-hmm. I thought that was... And then I was like, I've never seen this movie. But I liked it. Mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of interesting. And then the other parts were just kind of weird and disjointed.
Hmm.
So that's kind of my... I feel like it had a lot of potential is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
No, I mean, I'm used to it
by
now. I'll
see myself out.
Yeah, no, we're closing in on 100 episodes. I'm used to you... not thinking the same things are scary as I do. But it's interesting because when I try to characterize like, so why I think that this is scary is going back to like the similarity to that element in First Omen. Mm-hmm. And there was all like any time, I think when we were doing the episode about First Omen and Immaculate and we were talking about like the things in corners, like in Talk to Me, when the lady crawls out of the corner and starts sucking on the guy's feet, like that thing in the corner thing, like, is my childhood terror, right? The thing in the closet, like the open closet door or the shadow in the corner, or, you know, the something appearing in that way, was what I was scared of as a child. And so, like, I can see how definitely investing more in the backstory. And also, like I mentioned, like most of these characters were pretty one note, except there was only one that I felt actually invited an emotional connection. I don't need that intellectual stimulation to be scared by the visual of the shadow in the corner. The shadow in the corner will always get me.
Do you know what it was for me when I was a kid?
What?
Shadows and weird stuff. But my family had all these weird, like, clawfoot weird antiques.
Oh, yeah.
And it had, like, weird discolorations on the wood, like this Victorian pieces. And if you looked at it the right way, you'd think it was like a face looking at you in the wood. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yes, I do. I see that sometimes like in tile or like marbles that have like kind of a mottled thing. Like sometimes when I stare at it, like I
see. Those are demons staring at me.
Oh, wow.
And then I had Victorian dolls.
Of course, yeah.
Those were going to kill me too.
100%.
So I share those same concerns and fears.
Yeah.
And I just would like just run really fast by it. Or, like, turn my head away from it to go to sleep while it's staring at me. Yeah, for me, it's
like, I need the light on.
Like that's a bat trying to get me.
Yeah, and I guess then the most successful scary movies would be the ones that evoke the things that scared us as children and fuses it with the things that would scare us as an adult. And so, right, as an adult, what would scare us would be, like, what you described, the backstory of Candyman, or like, the actual horrors and atrocities that people do to one another, the actual, like, disgusting, terrifying things that happen in life, and you fuse that story with like the things that trigger the other part of our, you know, our fear, which would be something way
ice crackling, like,
yes, like that weird noise. Totally admit that this movie does not accomplish the intellectual fear.
Right. Yeah.
But for me, the cloak on the wall is all it takes.
I think, though, the part that kind of aggravated me was they were trying to do that.
Oh, you thought they were trying to be intellectual and they just failed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they were trying to do a backstory and try. And I was like, they needed like maybe two scenes, maybe max of more, just more backstory to make it a little more frightening to explain what this is and why we're randomly seeing these images pop up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not going to be, oh, a train.
I'm terrified of trains.
I hate those trains.
And money. Oh, my God. Coinage. It's so filthy.
You can't trust those.
You sure can't. And they cost more to make than they're worth these days.
In this economy.
And to be fair, like, you know, we noted all of the, you know, accomplished and recognizable performers in this. Two of the main characters, like Sasha and John, were not good actors.
No.
I mean, even also, Elliot, like, Elliot is mid.
He can
pull it off. And, like, what we've seen, like, him in The Alienist, it was a smallish role in The Alienist. Mm-hmm. He was one of the brothers.
I know, yeah. But I didn't feel like, oh, he was bad in The Alienist. No,
But in this, like, Sasha and John, like, I don't know those their actors' names, but they're not good.
No.
So that kind of hurt it a little bit, too.
Yeah, and I think having, I mean, for example, in the role of Sasha, the woman who's in It Follows and Long, like, that could have changed the game completely.
100%.
Having very, you know, talented actors and somebody bringing something different to the... Yeah. Because it's whenever she was talking, she's like, I'm scared. Like, it didn't feel authentic and I'm not here to shit out on people, but it's like, that's kind of...
Yeah.
It'll change how I feel about a movie.
Well, so. And you wonder like how much of that was the direction she was given as well, because when I try to imagine this movie with that other actress in it, she brings such a strength to the roles that she plays. Like, she doesn't run through them as victims.
Yeah.
You know, she's not like the damsel in distress. Mm-hmm. And Sasha's character very much was. Like, she needed to be protected. She needed to be cared for. She needed, you know, somebody to stand over her and watch her nap on the bed because she's not feeling well. She was a very weak female character, which is kind of inherently unappealing, but that might have been what the director wanted.
Yeah.
So like, he might have wanted her to be, like, yeah, that she was, the victim was a big part of her character that he wanted performed that way. So it might not have necessarily been her acting skill, but the way that they wanted the character to come across. Because if we introduce that other actress into this role,
I think it's a pretty blonde girl, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, who's been in a lot of horror kind of films.
But I think it's a great example. And you mentioned this all the time of like how, like, just one casting, you know, change, like these things just kind of happen sometimes, and it really determines the course of a movie.
Yeah. That, it can be like a magic or not.
Yeah.
You know, kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, that's a good point as well. Well, I'm intrigued because I actually didn't know that this was based on a real urban legend. So I am excited mm-hmm. to hear what it is.
So I printed out like two paragraphs, but it's from it's from a book by, I can't remember his name. Let me look here. So it's the chapter called The Bridge to Body Island. And I want to say Tales of an American, I looked it up and I was like, that's a wild title for a book. And maybe I'll remember later. yeah. So it's kind of has different urban legends in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it says it's a true urban legend and true urban legend style. The author mm-hmm. claims to have learned this legend from a friend, the Bye Bye Man, who was a blind albino born in the 1920s. As a boy, he was shunned by his parents and placed in an orphanage before running away after being relentlessly bullied. He later became a serial killer who traveled the country via trains and created himself a seeing eye dog dubbed the Gloom Singer, who is stitched together from the eyes and tongues of the Bye Bye Man's victims. Like the movie, the Bye-Bye Man could track victims down who either spoke his name or even thought about him, with Gloom Singer hunting them down and whistling to its master when they were found.
Okay.
The Bye-Bye Man from the story also carried around a bag of spare body parts dubbed the Sack of Gore to keep the Gloom Singer fresh. The movie uses these elements from the story but makes no attempt to explain the origins or any kind of coherent mythology. Including this killer is direct link to trains.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he gets, he kind of, it's like he's telepathically called mm-hmm. by people who think about him, and he goes and gets there, goes to kill people. So
that's interesting.
That's the kind of the origin story of that. And I was like, that would have been awesome to know this. You know, I had no idea that could have been given a lot more to who this guy is and why this hellhound guy,
the dog is even there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that he's blind and he's an albino serial killer. That would have been awesome to find out and to have that bit of backstory.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder if it was, they felt that they couldn't introduce that because of how much they leaned on, all of the information about him being redacted because people mm-hmm. were trying to stop him.
Yeah, I don't know.
So it's like, where would the characters have found that information?
True, but also, like, and I keep bringing up the Candyman. They're like, please don't say his name. No. Mm-hmm. But this is where this legend.
This is
comes
the story.
From.
Just don't
this
say
is
his
the story.
Name.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they say that, remember, in the sequel. Well, is it a sequel, kind of? But
yeah.
The new one.
The new Candyman.
The newer
yeah, it's
one,
a sequel.
Right? And the mom was like, oh, no, don't say his name. Zip it. But they will proceed to then talk about it or their experiences with it and who the Candyman is.
Yeah.
So I felt like there were so many opportunities, and that would have been really cool mm-hmm. to be if it was included.
You probably still would have hated the movie, though.
Maybe, but I would have
been like, we'll never know.
We'll never know, because they didn't work with this crazy story
material. Yeah, the source material.
That's weird.
Yeah,
albino
serial blind killer. Man. Yeah,
train on the train tracks, ready to come get you. That's why there's trains. Yeah. Would have been good to know.
Well, and you know, it's interesting. There was a part that I didn't include in my recap, but I think it's the first night that they're in the house, and Sasha's working on something for school, and Elliot is like reading a quote to her, and she's like, "Thanks for finding that for my paper," or whatever. But the quote is about the flipping of a coin and like fate or something, and it kind of seemed like that was them, you know, trying to front load the relevance of this, the coin in in the Bye Bye Man's like behavior and canon and everything. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really make sense. And so like they may tried to, but then they did it in one scene and they're like, nah, it's too hard. We'll throw the rest of it out.
That's fine. So the book is the chapter that I read from was The Bridge to Body Island, and the author is Robert Damon Sneck, and the nonfiction book is called The President's Vampire, just like a collection of American folklore.
Very cool.
Stories.
So. Good rec for some light reading. Yeah,
some fun weird little tales.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, good chat. Sorry that I wholeheartedly agreed to do this movie enthusiastically.
It wasn't that one. It's lucky for me because if you had seen it and knew what movie I was talking about, I never would have gotten to do an episode on it.
You are so correct.
Yes.
Although
I sneak another one in there.
You know, I'm flexible. Even if I'm like, okay, fine, I'll do it, but then I'll complain, just like Leprechaun.
Yeah, like Leprechaun. You know, I had to pull the St. Patrick's Day card to get that on the docket.
Not this year, lady.
No, this year we do Leprechaun 2. Or wait, which one is the one where he's in the hood?
I want to say 4, but 4? I could be misremembering.
Yeah,
I don't know. So our next movie we'll be talking about is, which I did the recap and I'm very excited.
And she is certain that she knows what this movie
100% is. 100%. Late Night with the Devil. Mm-hmm. I think
very
it was
recent.
Released, it was released in 2023. Mm-hmm. And is still streaming and what widely available to anyone who'd like to watch it. So check it out because it's a good one.
It's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, until next time. Bye.
Bye.